CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Joanna Loop will be telling us a little bit about her recently published books and their impact on the disability community. So, you were telling me that recently you had books published based on your life of faith. Tell me a little bit about some of the stories and how they might intersect with disability life.
Yeah, okay. My name's Joanna Loop, and I published very recently, last month, my first Catholic book series. And the book that I published in particular, which is funny that you reached out to me, but it was actually like particularly written for accessibility, was my first Catholic, Marian Apparitions. And it was exactly what we had talked about. It was printed in large print font. I tried to make it as easy to understand, but written also for a wide age range, because these are miracles of the faith, and I think no matter how old you are, they're hard, they're challenging to understand, because these, like, you don't know how God is going to move in your life, and the miracle that you might have, you might build an idea of what a miracle is supposed to be or how it's supposed to work, but that's not necessarily how God's going to move with you, because he's almighty, he's so powerful, right? He's everywhere and everything. He's going to put little messages for you, nudge you in certain ways, or send somebody to appear in your life when you're not expecting it, and it's going to blow you away. So the stories of Marian apparitions, as I said, I wrote them in large point font, but I also wanted to make sure that everybody could understand them. So, and what was really interesting is that he sends his mother, Mary, to do some healing for us. Like, you have to think of Mary, like, she's the mother of Jesus, but she's also mother. And what does a mother do? The mother nurtures. The mother loves. The mother cares for. And the mother teaches. So when it comes to disabilities, I'm sure you've heard the story in the Bible about Jesus performing all those miracles in his 3 years of ministry, right?
Yep.
Healing the sick, healing the lame, and casting out demons. But here he sends his mother, Mary, and she comes to speak to this little girl named Bernadette in France, and she tells Bernadette to start digging. And like Mary, Bernadette is an obedient little girl, and she says, sure, okay, yes. And she goes, and she starts digging, okay? So this is how I first heard the story. I'm like, okay, so she's starting to dig. I try to put myself, like, in my backyard digging. She's digging with her hands in the soil like this, kind of in this like rocky area along a river bank. And so she's digging in the mud, and her family, like, as she's going through this, her family's asking her, what are you doing? Like, why are you digging in the mud? They actually start to believe that she's crazy. And she tells them, Mary has asked me to dig. So she's digging, digging, and digging. And eventually, she finds a well. A spring of water. Okay? A spring of water appears where Mary, Mother of Jesus, has asked her to dig.
So,
then she gets this message to drink the water. So Bernadette, obedient again, puts her face down in the mud, starts slurping up the water to drink it.
So, I'm curious.
This is the story of Lourdes. So you might have heard of it. People, millions of people now flock to this spring of water that this little girl dug with her bare hands and slurped up the water from the mud. Millions of people come there now for healing. And there's so many miracles associated with it. People drink the water and they get healing. But so far, only 70 of those miracles, I still feel that that's a lot. 70 of these miracles have been scientifically proven to be miracles. They're the most rigorous procedures. So, yeah, I really urge you and your listeners to look into this. Because when it comes to disabilities, sometimes there's no cure. Right? And in Bernadette's case, there wasn't a cure for her. She had her own illnesses that she was dealing with. But when God asked her for help, he never promised her a cure. But he gave her something else. He gave her a chance to help others.
So,
go ahead, Cam.
So I'm curious, sharing this story in large print and doing it in sort of a cool, relatable way, do you think that'll be more of an open discussion prompter? Like, do you think people will have an easier time than just dry text here rather than hearing it as something understandable and relatable?
Yeah, I think I have two kids of my own. They love to hear stories. They don't want me reading just facts. They want to bring it to life. And so that's what we have to do, but we also have to make it accessible to everybody, because it's no secret that we've got differences, major differences in literacy abilities here, and major differences. It doesn't really matter what age you are, right? It has to be available to anybody, right? Regardless of their academic abilities. So yeah, this is my author copy, but I'll just give you an example of what I meant by it being. So it's got really large font there. And I actually changed this so it's a little bit less, so it's black on white instead of white on black. And then I changed the font too so that it's easier to read. But this is just to give you the idea of my rough draft, right?
So, do you see yourself?
So point by point over everything. Yeah.
So do you see yourself maybe doing something like an audiobook to extend the idea?
Project is going to be to translate it into Cantonese, Spanish, and French. And then I also wanted to make the Kindle ebook edition, you know, because there's faithful people around the world that would love to hear this message of hope and healing. And I want to make sure that everybody has the ability to reach it. Yeah. Or you know, Mary has her own way of getting into people's hearts.
So, that being said, do you think that hearing a story of hope might in itself bring something to someone who's suffering from something like depression or anxiety, just hearing that someone has been on this journey and managed to find hope and salvation?
As somebody who's been there, you know, I've been there, and the last thing that I had to hold on to was hope. So when you're in real pain, and I've been in pain, I'm sure you've been in pain, or your listeners have been in pain. When you are in that pain, and there's nothing else to hold on to, you have hope. And yet, actually, you don't know the threshold of pain that you can withstand until you're there. But the last thing that you can hold on to is hope, and it brings a lot of clarity. Yeah. Because sometimes that's not the end. You have to have that one little hope to get through to the next thing. And hearing stories of healing for other people can remind you, like, that can happen to me too. I can get through this. It's sort of like how I relate to my mom, my own mother. Like, she has been through pains. Sometimes when I'm really, you know, deep in suffering, I think about her. How did she get through what she got through? Okay, I can do it too. And that's how we stick together.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Milton Keyes will be telling us a little bit about his disability work. So, can you tell me a little bit of your disability story?
Well, I was born premature, and they didn't realize how premature I was born. But when I was born, the doctor diagnosed me that I would live 2 hours, then 2 days, then 2 years. Then they said I would not have any cognitive ability. I was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and that affects my fine motor skills. So I have trouble like tying my shoes or writing. I type everything, but by the grace of God, it did not affect my cognitive ability like they thought it would.
So, as you learned different skills as you got older, what were some of the coping mechanisms you used, the supports that helped you reach your full potential?
Well, first of all, I had parents that believed I could do anything. And because of that, and because my father is a civil engineer, we always figured it out, from writing aids to, I've been using computers probably since the 1991. So I've always been on a computer. I've always found a way. Another thing in school is I would do half of the problems because I could demonstrate I knew the material, but the problem was how long it took me to write my answers. So they would allow me to regrade on half of the work. So another thing, in high school, I had an aide that wrote for me that allowed me to take notes and do my tests, and he would help me get from class to class. And that was great, because by the time I got to college, I had no takers, but that's it. The only other thing I had was an electric scooter, because walking distances wears me out.
So, did you find that the schools were particularly welcoming in the accommodations you received?
No, sir. A lot of the schools would fight the accommodations. They didn't think it was necessary. They were trying to save money. And they would say things like, we don't want to be a crutch to Milton. When in actuality, these accommodations helped me be my best self, because it's in my brain, but getting it on paper is the hard part. Or showing up with a stack of books in my book bag, that's the hard part.
So, how did you push for the appropriate accommodations to make sure you had the opportunity to be at your best?
Well, I had parents that knew the law. They took good notes. They had great records, and they were informed. So when they time I got to postgraduate, I knew how I learned. I knew that I needed to hear books and not read them. I knew I needed note takers. So because our parents advocated for me first, I was able to advocate for myself.
So, in all you've achieved, is there any success moment or story you'd like to share that stands out for you?
Well, I'm a weird guy. I love graduation. And my last graduation was for my doctorate. And just walking across the stage and everyone cheering, it was validation of not only the hard work, but I'm in the right place. And then this last summer, I received a grant that funds my salary for my nonprofit. And that has been life-changing because it affirms my work and it allows me to do the things God created me to do and not worry about eating. Because I've had academic success, but employment has been a struggle because of my disability.
So, do you have any message as to how we as a society can get beyond those struggles, how we can see people for their abilities and the reasons they should be included?
First, you gotta see everyone as and realize that we all have struggles. There's no Superman on the face of this earth. So if we all have struggles, we all have ways of adapting to getting around those struggles. So if we all adapt to show our potential, some of us need more adaptation. But that doesn't mean we don't have potential. That means we gotta work a little harder to demonstrate that. But society misses out when we don't do that necessary work to demonstrate our potential.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
And then I noticed this old guy, face like an old shoe, and he walked across the room. And there in the corner, I hadn't seen it before, was this jukebox. And he put in a coin. And he pressed three buttons. And then...
Cowboys and Indies has been bringing you the best in British indie and alternative music for over 30 years on CJAM. Tune in every Saturday night from 9 p.m. until midnight as we bring you the best in British indie and alternative music right here on CJAM 99.1 FM, CJAM.ca, and Kochiko 285. We are redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
You see, the thing that makes sense of this crazy world is rock and roll.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from author Joanna Loop, and we heard Dr. Milton Keyes' stories of advocacy. In this segment of our show, Hubert Van Niekerk will be telling us a little bit about how disability conversations are navigated in terms of advocacy. So in terms of Every Canadian Counts as Advocacy, what are some of the best methods of navigating disability conversations to make sure the point is heard and not just seen as background noise or a problem with no solution?
I think one of the best things is to bring stories, real life experience, passion about what you're doing, and find something in common with people.
So, in that sense, do you find the public is typically responsive to the idea of understanding more about disability?
I think largely the correct answer would be no. I believe a lot of people are a bit fearful unless they already have a disability or have somebody very close to them that has a disability. It's almost like talking about your own death. You kind of think that it's not a when but if. And I think thinking about getting a serious disability, you don't even want to talk about it. You don't want to hear about it. And I think it's a sense of fear. People are just worried that they might jinx it for themselves.
But in that sense, wouldn't knowing the facts about the potential for acquiring a disability maybe bring some ease to that in knowing that the world doesn't necessarily have to be a place all about limits, but also one of potential? You can't do it this way, so you can do it that way, sort of thing.
Well, I definitely believe that that is correct. You know, people should be aware and should make plans. Just as I'm aging and I'm thinking, you know, how can I age in place? How can I change my house to make it so that I can stay here? The same would be that if you are to acquire a serious disability, you need to think about this stuff ahead of time and say, okay, if this happens, how quickly and how easily can we change this? So, and just like a renovation, people's minds have to be changed to think that this could actually happen to me.
So, recently you were telling me about a trip you took in which you shared a little bit about ECC's work and the important role it's played. Tell me a little bit about how and why you struck up those conversations and opened someone's mind to the needs of those with disabilities.
Yeah, I believe that was a trip we were taking to on the train. Is that the one you're referring to, Cam?
Yes.
Yeah, I find it very easy to strike up a conversation. Both ways, I talked for, you know, 2.5 hours, 3 hours about our everyday accounts, mission for a publicly funded national disability insurance plan. And on the way back, I talked to somebody that that was kind of an insider at the back of politics and gave us an idea of on how to move our agenda forward and the things that we were doing wrong. The politicians won't listen to this. Politicians won't listen to that. Politicians won't listen to that. Because it doesn't affect them directly. It doesn't move the needle for them as far as their political career goes. So until you can get basically right in their face, get them to know that this is a political issue. So you have to bring the numbers up, like we're trying to do with Every Canadian Counts. Because the more numbers you have, the more political power. You know, you can have petitions, you can have sit-down strikes for a day, but the next day, that's all forgotten about and you're left with nothing. So it has to be something that that doesn't change in a day. You have to have something that's lasting, a strategy that continues and not easily forgotten.
So that's the thing, though. I'm always puzzled as to why politicians don't look at their own constituents as persons with disabilities. Being noted as the largest minority in the world, I think even the estimated population of people with disabilities is grossly underplayed, but if you look at them as someone who might want to support their political career, why in the world would they not take it into consideration that these are people that they should be uplifting, that they should be having those conversations?
There are some that are. For instance, the sponsor of our petition, Mike Morris from the Green Party, I believe, he sees that. There's others also in other parties that see that. But it's not on the agenda of the general population. And I was told very clearly that unless there's people banging on their door demanding change, they have 1,000 other things to do that occupy their time. And if they don't need to take on a big, big project like this, that's going to be probably $40, $50 billion a year, they'll continue on with the next thing that's a lot easier to take. So I think that's the problem. The constituents aren't demanding it. And the reason they're not demanding it is because they don't even know about it. So that's our mission, is to make people aware of it so that then they can start to have those conversations at the door or at the MP's office, and to say, I've heard there's a possibility that all my costs, all my things for disabilities will be paid for if we follow this particular plan. And until people start to do that, it's not on the agenda. So we need to get it on the agenda.
So for those speaking about these matters, bringing it forward, for someone with a disability, I'm guessing those conversations would have to be clear from the outset as to this is what we're trying to achieve and these are the day-to-day needs. This is why we need it.
Yes, and the problem often is persons with disabilities don't have the energy, they don't have the transportation, they don't have the way to get to the MP's office or to the ability to amass a bunch of people, even in their area, to say let's go do this. So it's a tough one because not everybody's able to take this on, and so it does leave it up to others, you know, family members, volunteer groups that say we gotta speak on behalf of those that are having a hard time speaking on their own. And I certainly learned that in education with persons with severe disabilities that were nonverbal. And I learned that we need to be the voice of those that are voiceless and take up their cause. And I think this is an extension of that from education now into the, you know, we'll call it the world of politics or the world of trying to get better programs for people. So that, you know, the cost of disability, since it's not the person's fault that has a disability, why as a society are we saying they need to pay for that? Why should their parents need to pay for that? Why should mothers, for the most part, lose their Canada pension plan because now they become unpaid caregivers? Those things are wrong. So that's why we need to keep hammering away at getting this message out that there is a far better way, a way that's also more economically sound. It costs a lot of money, billions of dollars, not to provide things for people that they need to live and have a successful life, a dignified life. That's the bridge that we're trying to cross. And financially, economically, as a country, this makes sense to do. And so I think, you know, politicians that are a little bit more mean-spirited, if they can see it from a dollar perspective, I think that's part of our goal, and we're working on that, to point out how this is actually economically beneficial for a country.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam. It's always appreciated.
Of course. The truth, my friends, is disability life is all about stories, no matter how we choose to express them, through written words, political action, or just by the way we live our lives. People with disabilities are making a difference by sharing their stories, by reminding the world we are a people who need to be counted, people of hopes, dreams, ambitions, all their own, and people who should be counted, not simply because they have a disability we feel an obligation, but because we have something beautiful and meaningful to contribute to the substance of society. And by that, we all grow, learn something we didn't know before, have a new perspective on something we thought we knew. That, my friends, is how true growth begins, and how doors really begin to open. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.